football on off the ball.
Michael Duffy is, he's one of the best players that there has ever been probably in the League of Ireland. And at the moment, I'd say this last 2 years, 3 years even, he's just evergreen.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I'm delighted to be joined by Cork football legend Breed Stack. Today, Stack is speaking at the launch of the Ladies Gaelic Football Association's powerful new campaign, For the Love of Our Sport, ahead of International Women's Day. This campaign sets out to capture the heart and soul of the game and is a rallying cry for everyone to get behind the 2026 Little National Football Leagues and the TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Gaelic Football Championships. Breed, how are you?
Hi, Rachel. How are you keeping?
I was going to ask how the old house build is going. I think we had a few Wi-Fi issues coming in here, so maybe I better steer clear of that topic, should I?
Well, yeah, the weather has let me down today again, so I'll get the concrete pour done now on Friday and then we're away, so it's all good.
Probably one of the most stressful parts of your life, not including any of the sport, has it been?
No, I actually love it. I actually do love it, but yeah, the weather has not been playing ball, but... Other than that, I actually am really enjoying it. So sorry if I appear chaotic. I promise I actually am really enjoying it. But I had to whip out the cork top there, you know, when I heard we were going talking about the ladies' football. It still fits anyway, but it's a little bit snug, but it still fits.
It's great. I've gone quite neutral here with the blue, but it's great to see you're pulling out all the stops.
Good.
Breed, like, growing up myself, the neutrality will stop here now, like... Yourself and that team, for me, were just, you were idols. Like, you know, I actually have a signed poster at home of one of your All-Ireland victories that we got all the team to sign. But, like, even reading out the stats, like, 11 All-Irelands in 12 years, you played every minute of all 11 finals, 7 All-Stars, Player of the Year in 2016. I wonder... Is it possible to pick out a favourite one, or is it kind of like asking you to choose between the kids?
It's funny. Life before kids and life after kids, it seems like a lifetime in itself, you know, poles apart. But it's funny, you can mention one thing or one game or one moment in a dressing room and it transports you back as if you were, you know, back 22 again, back 26 again, in the moment, just absolutely loving it. You can nearly still smell the freshly cut grass kind of job, like, you know. So it's funny, you never go too far away from it. Myself and Rena Buckley, we met up there last week. We went in to see the Cork girls play Waterford in Park Erin, and the two of us were like two giddy calves, like, out for the night, because the match was on in the evening. It was on around 7:30. So, it's how unfortunate we can't carry any of the kids in with us. So myself and Marina were delighted. Off we went, the two of us. We brought our little bag of snacks and we got a cup of tea, each. And the two of us sat down, and you know what? We had such a great catch up, but such a great, great night watching the new rules, watching the girls, and just being inside in Park Erin and nearly reliving it all over again, you know. So like, sport will be something that will stay with you for all your life, you know, from when you're small till the day, I suppose, that you're not able to talk about it too much more. But, you know, we absolutely love it. And I suppose we're so fortunate that we had so many great days out and so many memories to cherish.
How do you find watching now, especially like that Cork team that you would have been playing in that fixture for a decade? How do you find watching from the sidelines?
Yeah, I love it. I love watching it now. It's like, I suppose when you finish up, I definitely found maybe the year or two after it, I found it difficult, all right, not to support the girls, but just difficult that I suppose that part of your life was kind of finished with, you know. But I suppose club is wonderful that way. Then club brings you straight back into new moments, you know, and different I suppose memories that, you know, you obviously don't have the big stadiums anymore, but you have such wonderful moments with girls that that you're playing club football with. And I suppose I have two small little girls now, and I'm looking forward to the day that I can bring them down to the pitch and they get stuck into ladies football as well.
You've gone back yourself, you've put the boots back on?
Yeah, so like, since I came home from Australia, I've been back with St. Fels, and you know, even the experience over in Australia, there's nothing quite like coming home and immersing yourself fully into a place where you feel so comfortable, a huge sense of belonging, and I suppose that you know what you're doing. So you're playing a game that you've played for so many years since you were small, and it's just second nature to you. And there's an enjoyment in that. There's an enjoyment in kind of knowing what you're doing, and you just turn up and you have the crack, and it's... I love our amateur game, I suppose, and I hope it never changes from that, because it's something so special. And even when I was over in Australia, like, you know, the Australian girls would marvel at us speaking about ladies football and the amateur game and how much we love it and the pride that we had in it. And I suppose that you play, the pride of place was so important. So yeah, still trying to play. I have a bit of a back issue now after the third baby, so have babies, they said. They won't bother you, but they did. The back isn't playing ball too well this moment, but hopefully be back by the start of May and back with the girls and, you know, help out in any way that I can, be that warming up the bench or bringing in water or playing a bit on the field, whatever it might be. I'm just happy to be there and happy to be involved.
Yeah, and no better woman, I'm sure. If I can take it back a small bit, Breeds, when anyone thinks of that team, it goes without saying that they'll be thinking of the late Eamon Ryan and just what a marvel he was. But what really was it like to train under him? Because he brought that group together really from nothing.
Yeah, so Eamon came in 2004. And I'd say his first incident, it was actually only... myself and Rena and Eamon actually had to do a thing inside in Parky Cueve years and years ago now. But it's only at that talk that Eamon spoke about how poor our baseline was when he first came in. And we were like, oh, you never told us. But he just said basically he had to really go back to the absolute basics with us. And I suppose we were very fortunate. We were coming up from minor. And I thought we were actually not too bad, but I suppose he had a different idea for us. He had a different standard that he wanted to set for us. And he had the big challenge of trying to merge a young, very successful group of players who had won under 14, under 16 minors, and an older group that... hadn't been as successful. There probably wasn't that consistency there, but he had this phenomenal ability of just merging everyone together. He had no ties to any ladies football club. He probably hadn't watched too many of the girls ever play football. But what he did have was this amazing opportunity to, or sorry, amazing ability to give you an opportunity if you were honest in all your efforts. If you trained hard, it didn't matter if you came from a junior club, from a senior club, if you were a senior county champion, or if your team was barely getting out of a grade, you know. He gave you an opportunity if he saw how diligent you were, how hardworking you were, if you obviously had the bit of talent that he could nurture. And he just put together a very, very effective system that every single one of us bought into. And from the day we started with him to the day he finished with us, if you got a pat on the back from Eamon, you felt about 10 foot tall afterwards, you know. So everyone still wanted to try to impress him and to play for him. And that's a real mark of a manager, that you can still get that out of people. But sorry, that talk that myself, Rena and Eamon went into, he actually spoke that day about the importance of player competence and nurturing player competence, and how that you start with the basics and you make sure that the basics are so innate, that are so worked on, sorry, that they become innate, and that through that you develop confidence, and through that confidence you give them ownership and you give them leadership, and then the manager becomes, I suppose, he fades into the background a little bit. And he did that so that on the pitch we were able to make decisions for ourselves, we worked together as a unit, we worked out problems that arose, and ultimately we were successful. So we owe him so much, and we owe his family so much, that they gave him to us for so long as they did.
It's something that I've often wondered, the fun that ye seem to have as a group, it's evident. You know, there's been documentaries made that comes out as well. He was instrumental in getting the balance of unbelievable hard work, but the absolute crack as well at the same time.
Yeah, oh, he loved the crack and like he loved the sing song. And I suppose he was a bit of ahead of his time as well. Like he carried us off on a training holiday. We had won the first All-Ireland. And after that first All-Ireland, there was obviously massive generosity around there. And we decided, look, we might never win an All-Ireland again. We'll go away on a holiday. We went away to Lanzarote and we all obviously did loads of fundraising and got over there to find out that we were actually going on a training holiday, that Eamon had changed it from a celebratory holiday to a training holiday. And geez, do you know what? It was the best crack of a week we had. It actually probably was the reason that we came back and won in 2006, because that week was such hard work, but so much crack. And he just allowed us, to enjoy both aspects of it. And the crack became so much more enjoyable because we had worked so hard. And even after that very first All-Ireland, I suppose, whether it was the players leading it or Eamon, but after that first All-Ireland, I'd say we visited every single girl's home place with the cup. And when you do that, you find out really a lot more about the person. You find out where they come from, you find out what made them, and you have so much more appreciation for them. And granted, there was probably too many floors changed in pubs across Cork County, you know, in 2006, but geez, we had some laugh, and it was the reason that we all came back and blew off the dirty diesel at the start, and were just so focused on getting back to that high caliber again. Because when you taste success, you just want more and more and more of it.
I'm laughing that you thought you might not win another All Ireland, so you better go and celebrate. Little did you know the decade.
But Eamon was brilliant in that. Like, he loved, as I said, he loved the sing song, but he also knew the importance of going out and just having the crack for the 3 months. And he gave us, like, I suppose back then the season was 9 months, and we had 3 months of absolute crack. You might call it debauchery, but we had so much crack and we were ready to come back. Everyone had it out of their system, and give 9 months living like a nun again for him, because we knew both sides of it. You loved getting the best out of yourself as a player. You loved seeing yourself at your fittest, your most capable. And then also you loved celebrating with the people that you sometimes went to hell with, you know, in some of those trainings. So it was brilliant, brilliant time.
Do you think that might be something that's getting rarer and rarer? You know, we see the professionalisation of the game and everything's kind of data driven. Do you think we're at risk of losing some of that?
Yeah, or else it's just the social media age. Everything is God almighty, if there was some of the videos that we had back in 2005, 2006, there could be some of us locked up. But, you know, the media age, I suppose, drives a lot of that too. Like, you know, you're very much a pillar in your community. And, you know, I suppose there is certainly that professional element that is coming in a lot more into ladies football, into the GAA. There's a lot more demands. You're there 4 or 5 times a week. I remember Eamon only ever made us train 3 times a week was the max. And he capped it at that. He's like, you don't need to be away from your families for any longer than that. And it's funny, the demands have come up, but it's always because everyone is just trying to find those couple of percents to get them over the line. And those couple of percents could be the difference between you winning and losing an All-Ireland. So everyone is just trying to find those percents. So maybe it's just something that people buy into, and then it just becomes a norm. And that's the way it is now.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves. And it's 7-2. Oh, my goodness.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
Yeah, I think it's a big, big moment.
The League of Ireland is live and exclusive again this Friday on Off the Ball.
There's still time here.
Last Friday night, the champions were battered by arch-rivals Bohemians.
Rovers haven't been good enough.
It was a late, late show, and to whom it may concern, Bradley's boys made sure this week's opponents were duly warned.
Aaron Green has made it 3-2, a game that was over.
Pretenders to the throne, Derry City came from behind to beat Waterford's with a couple of late ones themselves, and talisman Mikey Duffy struck again.
It's picked up by Mikey Duffy. Really well.
On Friday, the Candy Stripes come to Dublin looking to throw the gauntlet down to Rovers. Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City at Tallaght Stadium is live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 this Friday on News Talk and the Go Loud app.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
When you speak about the team and everything, you can see the joy in your face. How difficult was it to make the decision to retire?
Do you know, it actually wasn't, because I was so content with everything that we had done. I suppose I was very fortunate to have played for 14 years with the senior team. I rarely had an injury. So I had a fantastic experience playing football. In 2015, when Eamon stepped away, that was around the same time that a couple of the stalwarts started to step away. So in 2015, Juliet had stepped away. After 2015, Angela, Valerie, Geraldine, Nullig, there was a big cohort of our group gone. And, you know, be you a young person or an old person, when your friendship group and your people that you have spent so much time with start to step away, it obviously changes the dynamic of the team and it changes how you feel about the setup. But I had played and given as much as I could to Cork Ladies football, and I had no regrets whatsoever. And I suppose we won that last All-Ireland in 2016. And of the team that was left, there was myself, Bree, Drina, and Deirdre Riley. And after that, the girls stepped away, and I finished up in 2017 probably as the last kind of one that finished out. And it was still an enjoyable year, but it probably put the nail in the coffin that, look, I'm done now, and I'm very happy to step away. So I'm happy to have left with many phenomenal memories from down through the years.
And, of course, it was the end of your ladies' football career at intercounty level, but just the start of another adventure over to Australia, going over to the GWS Giants in Sydney. What were your first thoughts of training sessions over there, even compared to standards of maybe what you had worked on?
I suppose I was very fortunate coming from the Cork Ladies set up, and Eamon in particular, he was ahead of his time in a lot of his training sessions, but he also knew his limits too, and he obviously lent into S&C when the time came to lean into S&C heavily. So I felt our trainings were absolutely the pinnacle of standard. And when I went over to the GWS, I still thought that, to be honest, when I went over, our standards in under Eamon were absolutely exceptional. And the main difference that there was between the two was the resources that were afforded to us over in GWS and the time of recovery that was afforded to us in GWS. So they were the two main things that I took heed of. But in terms of standard and in terms of exertion, you know, they were on par, bar obviously the heat element that took a while to get used to. But
Rockchapel being much warmer than Sydney, of course.
Oh, Rockchapel, the metropolis of Duhallow, probably was on par with Sydney. Yeah, but it was the dry heat in Sydney, and it was also the double sessions. That was probably the other thing that I had to adapt to a couple of weeks in, was the double sessions. So you would go out onto the track, the field, as they would say, and you would do maybe an hour and a half on the field, and then you would come in and you would do an hour probably of a gym session. So that was the thing that I had to just learn to fuel myself better. I remember that first day I was inside the gym and I was seeing spots, and I'd say the Australians were like, is there something wrong with her? But I was like, I have not eaten enough food to deal with the two things back to back. So I learned to carb load a lot better on those days, you know?
Yeah. And the relationship that you had with Cora Staunton developing over there, you know, you go from probably being complete rivals, enemies maybe seems a bit harsh, but you know, in those days when you were facing Mayo, you probably were. And yeah, then you had this amazing friendship over the other side of the world.
Yeah, it's funny. Like Cora was probably the one that gave my name to Alan McConnell. So even at that, I was a bit shocked at the start, but we just started texting before I ever went over. And I'll never forget the first flight that we went from Cork over to London. From Dublin over to London. We met Cora, and over in London, Heathrow was just absolute pandemonium. And I remember us with just bags, buggy, everything. Like, there was just so much gear. And I remember Cora picking up Ogie in her arms and like, come on, so lads, we'll drive on. And since that day till the day we left over, I suppose we were like a little family, the four of us, you know. We leaned on each other so much, and we lived in each other's pockets, and we became such great friends. And it's a lovely period in our life, because for years we would have been marking each other, disliking each other a lot on the field, but in fairness, off the field, we would have always have been friendly. We would have probably put our armour down whenever we went on All-Star trips and actually realised that, geez, we're both massive cultures and we just love the crack together. So when we went over, it was thankfully a very natural fit, and we became great friends and have a lovely relationship and a lovely friendship out of it.
And you were among a minority, I suppose, at the time over in Australia. But this year we are looking at probably like 40 plus players heading over. And when I think even about that Cork team, how many of ye maybe would have been brought over to Australia, and the progress of that team probably being halted then? Would ye have had that period of dominance? And you've been over, so you know exactly what they have to offer. What do you think the future relationship between LGFA and the AFLW will look like?
Yeah, I know it's something that I probably am very grateful for, that I never had to make that decision. I had finished up my playing career at Cork when I got the call to come to Australia. I was in the latter stages of playing. So like, I think I was 34 going over. That would be unheard of now. You know, they're looking for younger girls that are maybe just finished college, that they are trying to get a 10-year span out of, you know, just like in the men. But will that happen? I don't know. At the moment, there's 40 plus girls gone over. If you took 40 plus out of the men's game, it would obviously diminish it too, you know. And I imagine like even the likes of Mayo now are going building a dome around Mayo to stop Colby McDonald leaving Mayo. But in terms of the ladies' game, the AFLW is still very much in its infancy. It is going into its 10th season over there. So they are still heavily reliant on Irish players to go over to bridge that gap. That the Irish girls come over as a ready-made athlete. Like, the biggest thing that the Irish athletes offer is they've massive resilience, they have massive training capacity, they are agile, their agility is just massive over there in that game, especially with the tackle and being able to evade it. Your agility is everything. So while Alan McConnell from GWS was the first to bring over someone in Cora, I don't think anyone could have envisioned the amount of Irish players that were going to be going over by this short spell, because there's a lot in bringing over an international player, and obviously they see huge merit in it. Will that trajectory continue? I don't know. What I do know is that the academies over in Australia are churning out massive talent that probably wasn't there 5 years ago. So they are bringing out their own homegrown talent that has been brought up through the academies for many years, and now they're coming out ready-made. They have you know, gym programs behind them. They have massive agility, they have skill, they have power, they have pace, and they're ready to integrate straight away into an AFLW program. So while it is worrying at the moment, and you see, like I said, our game, you're taking 40 of our best players maybe from our game, I don't see it continuing on for longer than 5-year period. And that's probably me being hopeful as well. I do think that it may come to a plateau. I think there will always and ever, there will be a need and a desire and a want from Australia to get Irish girls over, just like that there is always that need for them to continuously look at the men, for the men's game to bring over. And they have, like, so much homegrown talent, and yet they still look to the Irish. So the Irish have that something special. But for me, maybe, hopefully, I'm maybe hopeful that that will diminish in the coming years. In the meantime, what can we do? Weather the storm and look at what these new rules are bringing now to our game. And even in the short spell of a couple of months that these new games have been, or these new rules have been introduced, the change that it has made to our game has been monumental. It is already a much better spectacle. The ladies' game, you could argue, had gone backwards. It had stagnated. It had become maybe what the men's game had before the rule change. It had become very defensive based. It wasn't a great spectacle. And that's me as a girl, as a player who has played ladies football for years and love watching ladies football. I myself found it difficult to watch it, you know. So when the men introduced the new rules, the numbers were down in attendance. And what have you seen recently? The numbers have steadily crept back. Why? Because the product is better. So when you make the product better, the numbers are going to start coming back to attendance. And, you know, I'm testimony to that. I went to my first game last week, and I can't wait for the next game, you know. I can't wait to see what the new rules bring for Cork ladies and for ladies football as a whole, that it brings back the excitement and the speed and the skill and showcases the best of our product, because it's a great product and it just got a little bit stagnated, and now it's after getting a new breath of life.
Yeah, and the results that we've seen so far in the leagues have shown that. I mean, there's competition across the board. Every week the standings seem to differ. Great for Cork as well, you know, getting promoted last year and going unbeaten so far in this year. I won't keep you for too much longer, Bree, but who would you fancy this year for the championship? Like, it seems to be very, very open.
Yeah, it's very, very open. And I suppose when you talk about the new rules have already had kind of a mid-league review. They're going to go to a special congress at the end of April, and there'll be a decision made on them. I would imagine, given the positive feedback that it has gotten, that the new rules will come into place. So for championship, obviously those new rules will continue. Well, you would hope that everything would continue as normal and that it would be a great spectacle. At the moment, Cork are going very well, thankfully. There's always things to tweak and always things to work on. But Cork are going well, and I suppose for myself, I would never look too far into championship. Championship's a completely different animal. But I would love to see Cork make a league final, especially how that they have progressed in the last couple of years. I was up at their league, or their Division 2 league final there a couple of years back, and you know, to see in just such a short space time for them to make that jump is brilliant. And it just, I suppose, look, ladies football, like anything, it just comes in waves and cycles. When there's retirements, when there's, you know, changes of personnel, it's anyone's game. But what I do know is the excitement is back, and we're ready to follow along and enjoy it all.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll be keeping a key eye out on them for the coming weeks. Breed, thank you so much for joining us today.
No better. Thanks, Millie Rachel.